Youth, we might be tempted to say that as we hear this tale of a young fellow trying to find his way in life. Just before Mardi Gras, 1939, Tennessee Williams left New Orleans and lit out for the territory. As he climbed into the old Ford with his friend Jim Parrott, he had a vision of himself as a vagabond poet in the manner of Vachel Lindsay. Earlier in his studies at various universities and in his omnivorous reading in his grandfather's library, Williams had fallen in love with the Romantics. From Wordsworth, he garnered the image of the poet as a creature with special sensitivity whose life became the substance of his writing. And here we interrupt Dr. Nancy Tischler to say a writer whose life would become the substance of his writing, as she puts it, is certainly something for us to keep in mind as we begin to think about Williams' powerful play, The Glass Menagerie. Dr. Tischler continues, on his westward journey, tracing at times the path of the Okies to California, Tennessee Williams felt the pinch of the Depression. Jim Parrott, who's providing both the car and the funding, often earned a bit of money by playing with local music groups. When Jim's clarinet was stolen, they had to stop in El Paso to earn a few dollars for gas. One scrap of a draft letter that has survived is addressed to the editor of the El Paso newspaper, asking if he will pay for a poem from Williams. It seems Tom Williams thought he could survive from one donation to the next, but he discovered that he had to seek help from home. Williams did have to beg his mother for enough money to finish the trip. Dr. Tischler uses the name Tom in her article, Tennessee Williams, the Vagabond Poet, because the writer was actually born Thomas Lanier Williams III, taking Tennessee later as a kind of pen name. When we meet the character Tom Wingfield in The Glass Menagerie, we learn that at the Continental Shoemaker's Warehouse, he's mockingly called Shakespeare by his co-workers, and he pays the price for his art when he's let go after he's caught writing a poem on the lid of a shoebox. So Tom Williams has developed a character named Tom Wingfield, who is, in a sense, a writer. Mandy Pennington is a writer who has drawn on her own life from her memoir to create a one-person play. And she is the assistant director for the upcoming production of The Glass Menagerie by Scranton Fringe. Having immersed herself in her own memories, giving them creative form, she can wisely point to the powerful impact of The Glass Menagerie, as Frank Durham tells us. Tom Wingfield stands with us in the immediate present. At the start, he wears a merchant seaman's outfit, indicative of escape from the physical past, of his having left his mother and sister behind. But through his memories, we are carried back in time to his life in the drab apartment before his escape, and we retrace with him events leading to his decision to leave. Through this multiple use of time, Williams embodies both the concrete, the particular, and the general, the typical. The Glass Menagerie actually transfixes and holds up for insight a single brief moment of Tom's consciousness, a moment in the present in which he recapitulates the past, a past inextricably intertwined with the present and the future, freezes this moment in an intense moment of poetic insight. As Tennessee Williams contended, the audience can sit back in a comforting dark to watch a world which is flooded with light and in which emotion and action have a dimension and dignity that they very well would likewise have in real existence if only the shattering intrusion of time could be locked out. By arresting time, by embodying in a single moment the past, the present, and the future, by making this frozen moment one of tremendous intensity, permitting an insight for us otherwise impossible, Williams has made The Glass Menagerie, a lyric drama, one that touches us profoundly. While Scranton Fringe is known for its presentation of original works, often edgy pieces of theater, for their inaugural production in their new space, the Sanctuary Theater, they've chosen a classic of American theater. But that's not a departure in any way, because as we've just heard, in its day, Tennessee Williams was doing something that was groundbreaking with The Glass Menagerie, a play that still affects us today. Mandy Pennington, board member of Scranton Fringe, is assistant director for the production, and actor Werner Christensen, who has the role of Tom Wingfield, paid a visit to the WVIA studios to introduce us to their new home and also to talk about the power of The Glass Menagerie.
The Sanctuary Theater is located on North Main Avenue in Scranton, and thanks to the Discovery Montessori School, we now have a permanent performance space, which is so wonderful because it will allow Scranton Fringe to put on programming all year round. We do programming all year now, but it's difficult sometimes to be able to find venues that can accommodate certain kinds of programs. This will give us more flexibility to continue to produce work, as well as open the space up to new opportunities for the Fringe.
Werner, you were excited too when you came in. How did you get involved in the Fringe circle?
Yeah, the Fringe has always been a big name in the theater scene ever since I moved here back 7 years ago. So I've seen a ton of productions, but it's just never lined up to audition for one. So when I saw that The Glass Menagerie was auditioning, I knew it was an opportunity I didn't want to miss.
And how about you, Mandy? We know you've performed at the Fringe Festival itself in the fall.
I've been involved with Fringe as a volunteer since the beginning, since its very first year, and I've worked in many different capacities with the organization, so now I'm proud to be part of their board, and that has been a wonderful experience, getting to collaborate with other community leaders and people who are passionate about the arts in our region.
Tell us about the space. What's it like? What was it? What are the possibilities for theater in it?
So it is a sanctuary, both literally and figuratively. It is a previous house of worship, so it's a church space that's been converted into a performing space. And Discovery Montessori was wonderful with offering this space up to Fringe for rehearsal space over the past year or so, and that's been great. And then the opportunity came for the building to take on a resident theater company, and that's where Scranton Fringe stepped in. And not only will it be able to produce work there, but it also can help other organizations or other groups use this space to be able to present work. It's gorgeous. There's beautiful stained glass, beautiful woodwork. And I think that really lends itself to a production like The Glass Menagerie. It will feel very atmospheric when you walk in.
What are you noticing about this space and this play as they work together?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Mandy said, there's some beautiful natural features to the building itself that when you're in the space as an actor, you become kind of encapsulated in that environment and the lighting and the sound. It really has a beautiful shape to it that kind of draws you in. So it's been really exciting to be on the stage itself.
What has this piece meant to you in your life?
Any Tennessee Williams piece, you know you're going to get beautiful writing. There's a poetry to his dialogue and really has very strong, distinct characters that you have material to work with to then create your character. And then working with the other actors really makes it just this dynamic experience.
How about you in Glass Menagerie, Mandy?
So this is my first time actually working behind the scenes, really in a directorial position. I've only done a little bit of directing before, but nothing at this scale. So I was excited for the opportunity to get to be on the other side of the stage. And Tennessee Williams is a beautiful, beautiful playwright, because not only is there that lyrical quality to the language, but he creates these rich and multidimensional characters that are just beautifully flawed. And I think that having that contrast, a person who you root for, even when you're seeing their worst quality shine, is just, it makes for really compelling theater and really compelling storytelling.
This is a classic, but how does it speak to us today?
I think, you know, one of the great things about a classic work is that there's always the potential for it to be reimagined in some way. Even if you're not changing the text, you can play with the texture of the space. I think for us, We have some really unique production elements. So our set is beautiful. We have some interesting things, which I won't spoil for you. But when you see our set, it really speaks to this idea of it being a memory play and that sometimes there are things that fade away or look a little different. We also have live underscoring as part of this production performed by Zach Sprowls, who is doing an incredible job. So that creates almost a sort of cinematic atmosphere as you're watching it. And in addition to that, we also have some choreography a little bit for some of our scenes, which you wouldn't think for a production like The Glass Menagerie, but the wonderful Jessica Cadden Osborne has been working with our team to be able to create a few selected moments of movement to be able to set mood and communicate something deeper about what is going on in the script.
Are you involved in any of that movement, Tom?
Yes, absolutely. There's some stylized movement that I get to do, and then, of course, getting to watch the other work on stage, which is engrossing.
And you've talked about the poetic quality of Tennessee Williams' writing, and that would certainly allow for that kind of dreaminess and those moments that are not realistic. And when it was first seen, that was something that was quite distinctive.
For sure. And so much of the script, I didn't realize, because I'm familiar with Tennessee Williams' work, but I'm not as familiar with this particular script. So I was surprised when I first read it to see just how prescriptive it is about the use of projection, which at the time in 1944, you wouldn't imagine that to ever appear in a script. And he's incredibly descriptive about how he wants the stage to look, what elements of media are sort of incorporated into the production. I think that at the time, that must have been so wild to get to experience.
You told us that because Williams writes so beautifully and gives you as an actor the language with which you can work, how are you channeling your inner Tom, or how are you building that character?
Yeah, it's amazing reading the script, you know, almost 80 years later and seeing how universal the themes and the concepts are. So it's really easy to tap into some of the mindset of Tom, but just now bringing in my own experience that much later. So yeah, it's been really exciting and it's been, like I said, really universal.
And Tom doesn't want to be dragged down and stay in the apartment with mom and sister and be where he is. He has dreams. And we know how many young people are in their parents' homes still now here in the 21st century because they can't afford to break away.
Right.
But that certainly is one aspect of speaking to us today.
For sure. I think, you know, Tennessee Williams, because he had such a beautiful understanding of what it was to be human, that is what makes his work so timeless, because he knows what are those wants, those desires, those shortcomings that sometimes we have in our personalities or in our family dynamics that are very much relatable no matter what time period you're looking at.
How do you talk about Tom's sister and her shyness and her fragility? How would we talk about her today?
So we have had many conversations as a cast and as a creative team about Laura and about that character, because we want to, of course, you know, be very mindful that as the character is written, she is someone who has physical disabilities. But as we read the text now, we see that there's a lot of elements where this character could be interpreted as being neurodivergent. And we want to make sure that we're being sensitive to that and also being mindful of making sure that in any portrayal of a character like this, that we're being respectful not only of the work, but also of the actor and of anyone that they might represent. So we really take care to really talk through each of the scenes, to think about, you know, how does that manifest in terms of her relationships within the home, with other people. And, you know, we really try to make sure that we are looking at this very holistically to make sure that we're being respectful to the work, because I think it's very easy sometimes when you're working with a character who might have, again, a disability or a physical limitation, it can be easy to fall into that trap of falling into caricature, and we absolutely do not want to do that.
What about then the key image in the title, The Glass Menagerie, and Laura's collection? And we often think, well, the glass is fragile and transparent and delicate, and she is. Is there more to it than that?
I think in addition to this idea of Laura being fragile, I think we see the fragility in all of these characters. The relationships that we see are very tenuous in this apartment, and we see that evolve over time. But each of them has something that they desperately want and that they are desperately motivated by. And it's incredibly heartbreaking to see them struggle with either not getting it or making attempts to get it or wishing for it. And that is a very deeply human thing. So we're really, I think, thinking about not only the fragility of each of the characters, but also the nature of memory, in that, you know, when we think about the things that we remember, sometimes there are missing pieces, there are gaps that we fill in, there are stories that we make up for ourselves. So I think we're also really thinking about that as we approach this production, is what are some of the things that memory does to us? And what are some of the areas that that might show up in a physical representation, both of the world or in terms of movement, or in this case, you know, how we're incorporating in all of these production elements.
What is it that Tom and Laura's mother dreams of, or what were her dreams that aren't being realized? What do you find out?
Yeah, I think we're all challenged with that. So Amanda's kind of escaping her past of this kind of Southern belle, almost like American nobility, into the life that she didn't expect to end the way it did. And then now with her children, having them not quite reach the level of expectation that she had for us. So I'm challenging with my fitness for duty, essentially, of duty to the family and caretaking, and then with my dreams of other things, writing, you know, being elsewhere.
And Amanda tries to impose, or sets you up, Tom, to do something that can help your sister, and is very insistent about it, and there's no resisting her.
Yeah, no, she's very persuasive.
What does she imagine could happen for Laura?
I think her original hope was that she would have this same sort of congenial lifestyle that she had. She would have gentlemen callers coming to call on her, and that she might have a future outside of the home. She did try a few things that were unsuccessful, so now she is really kind of scrambling for what can we do.
Does the gentleman caller walk in knowing what the setup is, or he's just innocent?
No. It's a surprise.
Yep. He is not aware. He just thought he was coming over for dinner. I didn't even mention that I had a sister.
And that's part of the crumbling, the really devastating denouement.
Yeah, those final scenes are really heavy hitting, because you get to see on full display each of the family members. Kind of, you see everything come full circle for them. And it's all kind of incited by this one person walking through their door for dinner. We were talking about this actually at rehearsal the other night, where, you know, not actually a ton happens in this play. If we think about it, this is a work where you're not jumping through an entire like epic of all of these different events and things that pop up. It's really just one core thing that happens. But by looking really deeply into something like this, one tiny action, you get to see the ripple effect of what that action really means and its significance. And I find that if you can find a piece like that, that does that, it's just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's almost like a meditation, because you get to look and feel so deeply about one particular thing or one particular experience.
There's a play, The Man Who Came to Dinner, and that's funny. Is there humor in this play?
We definitely find moments of levity, for sure, because I think that anytime you're looking at a work that is dealing with a heavy subject, you need that emotional contrast. So we definitely find our moments of humor. And I have to say, Amanda as a character is really funny. really funny. She has these great lines. Like, she goes off on these wonderful monologues where she's storytelling. She's holding court for her family or for no audience in particular. And that can be really funny. But each of the characters has great moments where they add levity and they add humor. And I think that really helps to break up the tension. And it also shows us just how wonderful each of our performers is, because not only are they, you know, dramatically strong, they also have comedic strength as well.
And that's the family dynamic. It's not all just the anger and the tension. There's those moments of love and warmth and comedy.
Yeah.
And so it isn't just that you, Tom, for example, are backing out the door figuratively as you want to spread your wings. Do you become vulnerable in your interactions with Mom or Laura?
Yes, because I understand the position that she is in as well. And that's where my struggle is. It's that feeling for my family, but also wanting a future of my own.
Guilt, then.
Yeah, 100%.
As you suggested, Mandy, we don't want you to give surprises away. But do you set it in the 40s? When do you set this?
We do. We do keep it very true to the time. And we've done some things to be able to lend that sort of texture with very intentional choices around our set, around some of the sounds that you'll hear. And of course, our costumes, they're beautifully done by Ayana Vavzhenik. So she's done an incredible job with our costumes and, you know, the entire creative team. So of course, Connor Kelly O'Brien, our director, Ryan Carey, our stage manager, and Lee Michaels, our set designer. They just put together this really beautiful world that has those textures of the 40s. So I think you're definitely going to have that feel, but you'll also see that there are some interesting modern touches to what we've done that will kind of help us really play with that idea of memory.
And so the hope in having this space, as you laid out for us at the very start, you can use it to do pieces like this. You can perhaps invite others in, young people. Is there a young person's group involved in Fringe that might do works here?
Yes, actually. So the next production will be The Outsiders. So the Youth Arts Coalition will be doing their performances there, I think about a week or so after we finish. You know, Fringe prides itself on being an all-ages organization, and we're really dedicated to making sure that we partner with community organizations that serve all populations, you know, all the way from children up to seniors. So I think that, you know, this theater having this space just opens up so many more opportunities.
Jumping ahead, there is a playwrights incubation effort that's going on. Is that something you can speak to?
Yes, absolutely. So both the Playwrights Incubator Program and the Fringe Festival itself are accepting applications until April 17th. So there is still time for anyone who may be an aspiring playwright or is interested in producing their work at this year's Fringe. There's opportunities to be able to get involved. And you know, Scranton Fringe as an organization is designed to be supportive of artists no matter where they are in their artistic journeys. So if you are a playwright who has an idea for work, you're really looking for mentorship, for someone to be able to work with you on crafting that work, Fringe can be there. And if you're someone who has a piece that's ready for performance, they can be there to help be that stage. In addition to supporting artists, we also have the Theater for the People program through Scranton Fringe. So thanks to some of our anonymous donors, we have a number of free tickets that we can offer to performances for people who can't otherwise afford them. So if anyone is interested in attending the Glass Menagerie and you're not able to afford tickets, we would ask for you to send an email to info@scrantonfringe.org to request tickets. And this Theater for the People program is something that we make available year-round for all of our productions.
Let's go back to the Glass Menagerie, to the fact that that was the 40s. This is now. It speaks to us now. What do you find as people who really dedicate much of your lives to producing theater, being involved in theater? What is the importance then and now or any time for people to get together in a space in a communal way? We may not know each other. We might come with friends or something, family, but we get together and there are people acting in front of us and they're living, breathing human beings, in this case, speaking beautiful language. What is the power of that experience?
What I love most about that, and something different from what I'm used to, which is mostly musical theater, is that you're sharing such a slice of human life in these stories. And by seeing them on stage and being a part of them, you learn so much about other people and about yourself and your community. And that's how you learn and grow as a group. I mean, to collaborate with those people and to have that be the product, it's just really rewarding.
I think in an era of such immediacy where, you know, we are constantly driven to distraction by technology, by all of the demands and responsibilities that we have, theater, I think, is one of the last few places where you can be truly present, because you have to be just locked into the story in order to be able to experience it. And spaces that can offer that experience are few and far between sometimes. So I think it's all the more important that we honor these spaces and that we create more opportunities to be able to connect, to unplug, and just be present in something that allows us to be reminded that we're human.
Mandy Pennington, board member of Scranton Fringe, who is assistant director for the Glass Menagerie, and actor Werner Christensen, who is in the role of Tom Wingfield, speaking with us about the Scranton Fringe production of Tennessee Williams' classic, The Glass Menagerie, that will be presented at the Sanctuary Theater, which is the new home of Scranton Fringe. And that's located at 1735 North Main Avenue in Scranton. The show opens this evening at 7:30 and will run Friday and Saturday, April 10th and 11th, also at 7:30 each evening. If you'd like more information, on the web, scrantonfringe.org, scrantonfringe.org. And as we heard, Connor Kelly O'Brien is the director of the play. It's Scranton Fringe and its production of The Glass Menagerie by Tennessee Williams, opening tonight at the Sanctuary Theater, 1735 North Main Avenue in Scranton. Shows this evening at 7:30, also Friday and Saturday at that time, 7:30. If you need more information, on the web, scrantonfringe.org.